Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Bella Connor, and we're going to talk a little bit about her family research and her ancestors. So thanks, Bella. Great to see you.
Great to see you, Bob.
So we were just talking a little bit. You're in Utah, correct?
No, I'm in Colorado, just
Colorado.
a stone's throw from Utah.
But hot.
Yes, we're Grand Junction, Colorado, which is we live at 31 and 1/8 road, which means it's 31 and 1/8 miles from the Utah border. That's how we live things here.
Ah, that's too funny. That's fabulous. I love it. We want to talk a little bit about your Italian family. Obviously, Connor's not an Italian name, but I'm sure that must
Oh
be
no,
your
married name.
married name. First question I usually ask people is, why and when did you start, researching your family?
I always thought that my family, I knew the story. My great grandfather on my mother's side came over here from Italy, and at some point, he had left his family behind. At some point, my grandfather came over on the boat to meet up with his dad when he was 16. I always assumed everything was they came through Ellis Island. When I was in college, I did a semester at sea, and I remember the fact that we did not go through New York. We used Miami as the port that the ship would come in and out of. And I mentioned to my grandfather, I said, it's too bad we didn't go through New York because at that point I could have looked up great grandpa Frank's records. And my grandpa, Antonio Guarignoli, said, oh, no. My father, he no come up through New York. And I said, no. And he says, no, he came up through Miami. Oh, why did he come up through Miami? Why Miami? So we were always wanting to know what was more about it. And he says, oh, we went to Brazil first. Well, I didn't really put everything together, Bob, until the last couple of years. The last couple of years, after having my family raised and everything, I decided to dig in and find out more about it. I had to find out that, I do kind of off the wall research. I'm always looking for that story. I was a theater major, besides getting the documents, because I was a teacher and a paralegal. I was a theater major, so I was always looking for the story. Why did my great grandpa go down to Brazil? So I didn't search on the internet. What was happening in Brazil at the end of the last century? Well, at the end of the last century, or at the beginning of the last century, I should say, early 1900s, late 1800s, Brazil had to get rid of their slave trade. So they got rid of their slave trade to keep up with modern times, with England and the US, but they needed people to clear the land and plant plantations. And so I decided to look into this. And that's when I discovered that my great grandfather and his family went down to Brazil first and they worked on the plantations. And I wanted to know more about it. So I got a hold of a woman in FamilySearch and I just wrote to her on the FamilySearch website and I said, okay. Do you know anything about Italian immigration to Brazil? And she said, Bella, it's strange you should tell me this because I just got an email from a Carlos Guadagnoli, same last name,
Wow.
from Sao Paulo. And he wants to know about his family who came up here. So we got in touch with each other. And guess what? He's a cousin. He's a cousin. And what happened was my family went down there and they cleared the land. You know what that means?
Yeah.
To the rainforest? Yeah. And what did they plant? Coffee. So you better enjoy that Starbucks in the morning because the Starbucks is what put up the rainforest. Then the family all went down there, all kinds of family members, and they and this was through stories and with the help of Carlos sending me records back, the fact that they purchased land and then they got into an Italian family fight, and some people were kicked out and jilted out of the land. So then my great grandfather and his father and his brother decided to give it up and they came up through Miami. My grandfather decided to come down here and meet up with his father when he was 16, and that's how they got together. My grandmother's story is a little different. My grandmother's story is that my great grandmother, whom I knew, was upset with her brother-in-law, who was very abusive. They were all in Calabria. Cosenza, Calabria. By the way, my grandfather was from Reggio, Calabria. But my great-grandmother on my grandmother's side was from Calabria, and she got mad at her brother-in-law who was constantly beating up her sister. So one day he was dragging her sister up the street to his house, and he says, "I'm going to kill the whole Malami family." So she got a gun from the closet and hunted him down, burst into the door, and killed him.
Wow.
I knew that she had somehow had to come to the U.S. because of it. But Bob, honestly, nobody knew anything except what she would say. I mean, I was 15 when she finally died, but she would tell me in Italian that she got him, and she would say right between the eyes, and she'd laugh. It wasn't until 2 years ago, I got onto an Italian website with Facebook. I told the story and I says, "I'm trying to find what happened here. She had to have been exonerated by a Roman court." Within a half an hour of asking a question on a Facebook Italian genealogy site, I got two answers. One was from an Italian attorney, a female Italian attorney, who found it for me in what we would call a reporter. You know, those gold books with the red and black backings mm-hmm. that you see every attorney on TV interviewed in front of. Those are where the stories are kept. So she printed out the story and she laid it out for me, and then she translated it. She didn't just kill him. She shot him in the lower abdomen with a ball shot, which you know what that means, where she got him.
Yeah.
And he bled to death on the spot. And then somebody else came up with the court documents that said, this is what happened. It had to be appealed. Of course, she had to be found guilty. But it went straight to a Roman court. They didn't wait for a year's time to do this. And this was in 1899 or something like that. And so it went straight to a Roman court. And the Roman court asked three questions. One, was she provoked to do this? Two, was it reasonable that she shot him? And the answer was yes. Three, should she be released? And the answer was yes. So it was that simple to go through the Roman court thing and to let her go. So they let her go. And then she left from there with a friend of hers. And we finally found her records. But let me tell you, when you search for Ellis Island records and you have a name that's an unusual name like Molami, which is M-O-L-L-A-M-E, sometimes it's spelled M-A-L-L-A-M-E. I had to look for everything. No one in our family could find it for 3 decades. And then I decided to look for where she was from, Aiello Calabro. So I started looking at where the people were from. And when I saw that, I looked over and there I saw Angelina Malone. It was spelled Malone. So they changed her ethnicity as well. You know, now we're Irish. But I had to look for that. So, you know, you have to look around the corners, I'm saying, to try to find your research and to supplement it, because I think the records are there. You just have to know how to pull them up. So that's odd. And then, of course, if you want me to talk about my grandmother's story, which I sent you the little thing of the story, my grandmother came over here. She hooked up with a man by the name of Giovanni Russo, and she gave birth to my grandmother in Trinidad, Colorado in 1908. However, his father got a hold of him and he said, "Hey, Giovanni, you messed around with Antonia up here. She's your cousin by, you know, so many degrees. And now no one in the village will have anything to do with her. You owe it to your family to come back here and make an honest woman of her. So leave Angela behind in Colorado. She'll find somebody else." So he did. He left my grandmother and my great-grandmother behind. My grandmother was just a baby. And he went back, he married this woman. And then throughout her life, my grandmother knew that her father had a son. He came back to see her get married. He gave her away at the wedding. And he says, "You have a younger brother named Eugene." So she goes, "Okay, you know." And then he went back and died in Italy in 1934. Somewhere along the line, she received a letter from an uncle saying, "By the way, you have an uncle by the name of Eugene, and he is going to move here to Canada. So be aware of that." So my grandmother knew that he was going to move to Canada in the 1950s. That's all she knew. However, we knew that the place that he moved to was called Kelowna in British Columbia. So at some point in 1965, my father, who always loved to take road trip vacations, got a truck with a camper in the back. And he said, we're going to go up to Canada because we're going to try to find your mother's brother. He was talking to my mom. So we loaded up into the back of the camper, and I was 13, my brother Rick was 12, and my brother Tim was 10, and we all got in the back of the camper, so did my mother and my grandmother, and we went across the U.S. up through British Kelowna, and we were looking for Russo Farms, and we traveled and traveled and traveled, and then we finally stopped and to ask, because this one guy said, oh, Russo, I think he's up the road someplace, but you just have to travel around and look for mailboxes. Well, we were almost running out of gas, and this was farming community with nothing but acres and acres and acres of farm. So my dad decided to drive up this one long driveway just to ask if a neighbor might know. This lady came out and said, oh, you're from the States. I'm on the phone. Just a minute, you ladies, just a minute. Come on inside. You men can stay outside. So my brothers and my father stayed outside and stretched their legs. And I followed behind. And I saw my mother and my grandmother go into the front room. The lady stayed behind on the phone in the kitchen. And my grandmother went toward a picture on top of this TV set. And she turned to my mother and had her hands clasped across her chest with tears in her eyes. And my mother got excited too. And then when the lady got off the phone and I followed her inside, I saw the picture and I recognized it. Because it was the exact same picture that had been in my great-grandmother's house all those years. And the lady looked at that picture and she said to my grandmother, oh, that picture? She goes, oh, that's my husband's father. And my grandmother turned to her and said, yes, I know. He's my father, too. And then we found out that she not only had that half-brother there, she had two more half-brothers and two half-sisters that had all immigrated from Canada since 1950, and this was 1965. And so we were excited. We met all these people. Now they're all my friends on Facebook, and we keep in touch with each other. And there's all kinds of, you know, family goings on. But it's just amazing how you can find family members if you're creative enough to go beyond going to the courthouse to dig up a document.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera. Connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. Well, that's nuts.
mean, yes.
But, you know, I say this a lot to people, you know, it's almost like, you know, they want to be found. I mean, you know, what possessed your father to take that? And then to just drive down that driveway. But I've heard so many stories.
I don't know. But that is the way it was. Because my grandmother kept a diary. And that was part of it. You know, oh, we're just going to go down this driveway and ask. I mean, we knew we were in the neighborhood, you know, within three or four farms. But we're talking 50-acre plots here, you know. And he just decided to go down that one particular driveway. And yeah. It, of course, the next one would have known and they would have said, well, it's so-and-so. But it didn't have the same impact that introduction did, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, one story that I heard that's kind of similar. Somebody was looking for their relatives in Italy and they were trying to find a place to stay and everything. And she said she narrowed it down to two B&Bs. And she went, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, I'm going to pick this one. And when she called, the woman said, well, why, you know, this is the middle of nowhere. Why are you coming here? And she said, well, I'm looking for my family. And, you know, here's, you know, she said, what's the name? She gave it a name. And she said, hold on, I'm going to go get my mother. Now, she's talking to somebody in the United States from Italy, right? The mother gets on the phone. This woman in the U.S., it was her, I think, great aunt or something like that, that left the property to these people because she didn't have any children. And she just happened to pick that place to stay at.
Oh, wow.
Now, is that coincidence?
Sometimes you just don't know. I mean, that's what's exciting is when you meet some living people. But, you know, there's some things that you can get into also. I mean, my father's family, I found out, have been here. They settled Jamestown. My father's family was English that went right back. And so now it was easy to find those records, you know, for some reason. They were just easy to get as far as names and dates go. So I decided to play around with the names and the dates. I mean, my great aunt thought we were members of the Mayflower. I have found out since that no, we're not descendant from the Mayflower. However, Jamestown was before the Mayflower, so that was kind of exciting. I decided to look along the lines of people who live in a certain era, and I grabbed the last name, and it was in the 1600s, and I plugged it in because I knew it was on the Eastern Seaboard. I plugged in that last name. I can't even remember what it was now, Starkweather or Hollings or something. And I plugged in witch trials, and there it was. The name of my ancestor, the one that I had selected that would not show up on any other document, showed up in a list of Salem witch trial people, you know? And then I found several more. One of them, Isabella Pace, actually was, I mean, my namesake almost, actually was interviewed. I mean, she was one of the people that went to testify for somebody. There apparently there was with the witch trials, there are a lot of it's not just documents, they have scripts of what was actually said. And there was an old woman who'd been accused by a young girl, which is how it all started, all these young girls doing this. And she always cursed underneath her breath. So the girl said, "She's a witch, she cursed at me." So what my ancestor said was, no, she was always like this. She's ill-favored. In other words, she was a bitch, not a witch. That's how she put it. And so that was her. The other one had actually been sent to the gallows. And that kind of blew me away. Then I found out that not in a direct line, because he wasn't a great-grandfather, but he's my great-grandfather so many times back, brother was Cotton Mather. And Cotton Mather is the guy that wrote the book on how to find a witch.
Yeah. Wow.
And I found that's something you don't want to find out. And I went, oh, geez, I don't even want to know that. I mean, for your information, like Nathaniel Hawthorne, who wrote The Deerslayer, his great answer, it wasn't even a great answer, it was like a grandfather or something, was Judge Hawthorne from the witch trials. And it had a W in the judge's name. And Nathaniel Hawthorne took the W out so that nobody would affiliate him with his grandfather.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, see, my kids are adopted, and my daughter, you know, she wanted to find her birth parents as soon as she turned. Well, she wanted to find them at 16, but I said, you have to wait till 18. That's the law in Florida. You have to wait. But,
yeah.
You know, we all did DNA, and but when she found her birth parents, they've been here since the late 1600s, early 1700s on both sides of her birth parents.
Oh.
But her birth father, through her birth father, she's direct from Daniel Boone and Captain Morgan, the pilot, the pirate.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
I was just watching about the Pirates of the Caribbean on TV.
Yeah.
You know, black sails and all that.
Yeah. So then on her mother's side, you know, I was able to trace back because they were here, you know, so long. I was able to find records going back to England, and she's goes back to an Italian family of musicians that left Florence at the time of King Henry VIII, the Bassano brothers. And one of her grandfathers, I forget which one, I think there were three brothers, but they all played at the court of Henry VIII, and they stayed in England. So they married English women, and then, you know, their kids, and, you know, they were, by that time, they were English. And she's also descends from the Spencer, Diana's family.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. So, you know, that's pretty neat. But so two things I want to ask about is first, you know, regarding names and all of that, you know, especially I know Ellis Island had changed, but even when you look, you're searching the Italian records on the Antonati, my great-grandmother, my great-great-grandmother was from Switzerland, and her last name was Mohr, M-O-H-R.
Uh-huh.
And I found that spelling on the Antonati. I found Molar, M-O-L-A-R, and one other spelling. So to your point, you know, you got to try things out. You got to, you know, what you think the names were probably weren't. But I want to go back to the family that went to Miami. Now, when they went to Miami, did they stay in Miami?
No, actually, this is what is so weird. And I'm just now finding this out. In the early 1970s, I went away to college in Southern Colorado. And Guadagnoli is an unusual Italian name. Mm-hmm. And there was a boy in my speech class with the last name of Guadagnoli. And I teased him. I said, you just watch. One of these days, we're going to find out we're related. Well, guess who popped up in my ancestry DNA? His brother, you know, so there he is. So we've been in contact the last couple of years, especially what I have to be aware of is how the name is spelled and misspelled or changed. Like my great grandfather spelled it Guadagnolo. My grandfather changed it to Guadagnoli with an I. And then I found out that if it's Guadagnoli, it's the family. If it's Guadagnola, it's a woman like my mother. She was known as Guadagnola in school. And if it's a guy, it's Guadagnolo, a lot like the Spanish, you know, the whatever. But the thing is that my great-grandfather's brother decided to change it from Guadagnolo to Guadagnola, G-U-A-D-N-O-L-A. So that gave me a heads up that there's a lot to look for. So when I found this guy I went to school with who spelled it just like my grandfather did, actually, and I found his brother in my DNA, and I contacted him, and he says, the guy that I went to school with, he says, I didn't have my DNA test done, but that's okay, because Mike's got it done. And I said, well, that's good, but let's discuss this. So that's when we found out that there are so many of them that moved to Colorado. They came straight up for some reason. That's what I wanted to find out. Why did they go there? It's because of the advertising for jobs at the time. And that's what you have to look for. Just like Brazil went to the Mediterranean. It wasn't just Italy. They were looking just like a recruiter does for a sports team. They went to Portugal. They went to Spain. They went to Italy to try to find people who wanted to work in the fields of Brazil. So what happens is when you come back up from Brazil, they saw all kinds of stuff in Miami from across the United States, depending on the kind of worker it was. They knew that the Italian immigrants who were coming in at that time, because immigrants happened at certain specific times, you know, at certain ports, that there was mining to do in Colorado, mining and farming. So my family, the Guadagnolas, came up through Colorado. Some of them stayed in Trinidad, which is on the southeastern side, specifically for mining. The rest of them came up here to Grand Junction, specifically for the farming. So it depends on how you look for that. And they didn't stop along the way. They didn't stop and have families, you know, and move from town to town like you'd see in the Great Depression or the Grapes of Wrath or something. They actually came up here specifically for those job opportunities. So when I found the guy down in Sao Paulo, who's my cousin, and he contacted me, he said, Bella, I know so much about your family from down here. And he's sending me stuff all the time. And it's incredible. And of course, he speaks some Italian. He speaks better English than he does Italian, because his main language, of course, is Portuguese, mm-hmm. which is different. But anyway, so he sends me papers, or he'll send me stuff from the records down there in Sao Paulo, as well as Rio de Janeiro, because that was the main port. And then they travel to Sao Paulo. And he sends me stuff all the time about what he finds that our ancestors did in the past. And that's the key too, is to not only play around with history, look for that story, slap your ancestor's name in the story and see if it comes up in the history books, because it'll come up in the history section where it won't come up in a court record. Look for the misspelling of the name, look for job opportunities or the history of a particular area. You know, what was going on in Sao Paulo, 1910, what was going on in Calabria? Well, yeah, Italy didn't become a country until 1861. People forget that they were individual city states, like Vatican City is its own city state still to this day. And so they've got Northern Italy was really going like gangbusters when it became the Italy, but Southern Italy was very poor and very starving. And my great-grandmother did not move from Italy. My great-grandfather, here in Grand Junction with his son now, went back to Italy several times to see her and to give her money with their remaining daughter, but she refused to come to the United States for whatever reason. Now, my brick wall is I'm trying to find out what happened to her. He died in 1941 here in Grand Junction. I visit his grave regularly. But as far as my great-grandmother goes, she disappeared. I have written, no one can help me. I don't know what to do. It was during the war. What happened? Was that the Southern Italy that got bombed? Did she die and nobody knew who she was? Fenice Anselmo Guadagnoli has disappeared from me. And it's so strange because I have letters she wrote to her husband and they're heartbreaking. You know, my dear esposo, why have you not written to me? Why have you not sent me money? Then I got another letter a month later saying, your visit was so wonderful. So I don't know if that triggered him going back at that time or if she just missed it, that he was coming to visit her, but he did go there a couple of times, gave her money, saw the family and came back, but she refused to come back. Those wow. are answers I guess I'll never know.
And that must have been some trip.
I know.
That must have been.
And I have found his records at Ellis Island later on, like in 1935, I think, he went back. And in 1939, he went back. And then he died in 1941. So what happened to my great-grandma? Hmm. I'll never know.
Wow. That's
I'll have to go there, I guess.
Maybe. But like you said, you know, if during the war, who knows, anything could happen. I mean, you know, there were other things that went on. So with the DNA, other than finding out, you've related to your friend in school, any other crazy things pop out?
Yes.
Of that?
Exciting things. Okay. So we always associated Canada with my grandmother's side, the Russo side. With the DNA, and then actually I had my cousin bought my mother's DNA test. She bought hers through 23andMe. I have mine through Ancestry, so that's great because we can pull it together. But I discovered all these names, the same names in our DNA that my grandfather would talk about who he knew in Utah, but they weren't living in Utah. I mean, same names, but my grandpa would always say, yeah, I know this man named Anselmo. I know this man named Beltre. I know this man named Caputo. Well, guess what? I have all those names as far as cousins go. And so they're the same ones. So they came here or they filtered here. But now I found out that my grandfather's family with all those names are also up in Canada. And not only that, I discovered that some of my grandfather's Canadian relatives knew my grandmother's Canadian relatives and they're best friends, but they're not related to each other, except through me. So that's what I'm finding now. And I'm writing to them and they're writing back. And that is what the slew of correspondence is now. I'm finding all these relatives here close to me, as opposed to being in Italy, that are from Alberta to the coast of the Pacific, you know, in Vancouver, who are all related, intermingled from either Guadagnoli side or the Russo side. And they're Caputos, Beltres, Anselmos, Elbows. You know, all those names are coming up to the forefront. And it's kind of exciting because now I'm talking to them and our family is just growing exponentially, you know?
That's fabulous. You know, and that's kind of, you know, what I say to people too is, you know, you have to try weird things. I mean, I found a family in Italy, same thing. I mean, my grandmother's name is Piermalo and it's only that family. There's only one family that has that name. And so I just started looking for every Piermalo that I could find on Facebook and said, this is like, you know, my grandmother and my great grandfather and my great great grandfather. And, you know, do you know the, and she, yeah, they started coming
yeah.
up and say, yeah, it's us, you know? So, you know, it's a mystery, but it's also, there's a lot of love involved in it. You have to be, I feel that we're all kind of tapped to do this kind of stuff.
You're right. There's a lot of love. And I was speaking today via email with my cousin up in Alberta and her name is Teresa. And we, it's like we know each other. I mean, of course, yeah. We have been on the phone, but still, it's like I feel like I've grown up with her as we compared notes. We grew up with similar, I don't know, what do you want to call it? Similar things that the family does, you know, and it just seems like we've been together all this time, even though we've never met. And that's what's kind of a thrill.
Yeah, and that happened with my fourth cousin. I mean, we had never met. We found each other through ancestry. And what we learned through you know, all of this was that our families through the 20s, through the 60s and 70s were joined at the hip. But we had, as far as we know, we never, but we grew up in Queens, you know, New York. Who knows, we may have crossed paths someplace along the line, but, you know, we probably little kids. But to your point, you once we met and started talking, there's a bond there that it's different, you know, it's just different. Hard to explain for people, I guess, who didn't experience it.
So let's talk about a little bit about people you don't know or that you didn't have a contact with, because I do feel like meeting with all these people who are alive today, I have had contact with my family in the past. It's just terrific. My father's side of the family, who was English, and they were the pioneers that came over, and they ended up being Mormon pioneers. That's how come I was born in Utah, from my father's side of the family. But of course, he met a good Italian Catholic girl in this mining town of Sunnyside, Utah, and that's what happened with me. But I discovered, and this was kind of a shock to me, that on my father's side, my 2 times great grandmother was murdered in Cedar City, Utah. And she had some little girls with her, I mean, her children. And my great-grandmother was 5. She saw her mother being murdered, and she hid out in the field for 2 days before the families in the town found her. And that was heartbreaking to me. So I wanted to follow her story. I discovered that she met and married this older man who had had a family before, and then his wife had died, met her when she was in her early 20s, and he was almost 50-something, and they married, and they started their family. But they moved up, and they went into Price, Utah, where he started a community theater, and she was his actress that he used in all the plays. Now, flash forward to me. I had an expanded major in theater. I was the only one in the entire family who had a theater major. And everybody kept saying, where did you get it? Where did you get it? Well, then I look back to my father's family and I see my great-grandmother who, coincidentally, not only was in all these plays in the community of Price, Utah, her birth date was the same as mine. And you go, whoa. Yeah. And you think you don't have a connection to somebody whose face you see on a piece of paper. And I really don't know my father's family well at all because he died young and I was never that close with them. Now I'm trying to find them. So I'm kind of pedaling backwards. With my mother's family, I always felt this unity with everybody I knew living. With my father, I didn't know anybody living. So I'm trying to do it backwards, sort of. But now I'm finding little things that I'm finding with these names on a piece of paper, individual little tiny pieces of information falling into place. And I get to feel like I know her inside, you know, like I knew her and I didn't really, but somehow I carry her with me as well. And it's a different feeling, but it's still there. And some people don't get that, but I do, you know?
Yeah. I know what you mean. I mean, so it's funny because sometimes we'll watch one of these shows, you know, back in the 1700s or 1600s or something like that. And, you know, my wife will say, wouldn't it be great just to be able to like, I don't know, I think I might want to be there for a while. Maybe not that, but she said to be able to like look in, you know, to rather than just a TV show, but to be able to be there and see without being there, if you know what I mean, you know, to see how these people lived and you know, to actually see them. I mean, I think you feel the same way. I would love to have met, you know, you met your great grandmother. I didn't, they were in Italy, but I would have loved to have meet these people and just know how they lived, you know?
Exactly. And to see what they did. I did read something about my great grandmother's, what she did when, let's see. Yes, it was her when she was younger and her mother wasn't around. And they had her, she was going to make some pants for her stepfather that took her in. Mm-hmm. So I found this written down by another stepsister of hers. She said that Elvira got down. She had her father lie down on the ground with fabric underneath him. And she got down and traced where his legs were and where his waist was. And she cut out a pair of pants like that. And she tried to make him a pair of pants. And he was so proud of it, because she was only about 11 or 12 years old. Of course, they weren't fitted like a real pair of pants, that he wore a belt around it just to show that he appreciated the fact that she tried to use him like a paper doll by making that out of him. So you can find little bits and pieces from little diaries and such, if you can find them, from other members of the family that have the observation points that you don't have. And then that kind of brings it in. And of course, I was a teacher once, and I did get involved with our genealogy club about, I taught a class on how to write your genealogy story. And I used that story about me finding, or our family finding my grandmother's brothers and sisters. But I also gave assignments to my students. I said, pick one of your favorite ancestors that you like, and imagine them being with you for a day. And I want you to explain to them what it is like to live in a modern day and age. And then conversely, the next assignment was, look up the history of when your favorite ancestor lived. And I want you to write what it would be like for you to live a day in their shoes. You know, so you can write those kind of stories and you can add them to your genealogical work as well. You know, it just kind of gets to you.
I like that. I think I'm going to do that. Write about what it would be like for one of my ancestors. I like that. That's really,
and always look at the history. Sometimes you're going to find out more about your ancestor in looking at the history of the place, like I did in finding out why did they go to Brazil, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to find out more about that than you are about anything else. And search for different things. I mean, the internet, Wikipedia is my friend. You know, it really is. I have looked up so much different things about Italy, like in the late 1800s, what was the produce like in Aiello Calabro? And I found out that what the farmers actually produced there, not just a myriad of things, it was just a few short vegetables. So that was it. Kind of like the Irish only getting into the potatoes. And then, you know, what happened with the potato famine and everything. But, you know, you have to look at the history bits. What was that? And then look at the, the etiquette. What were the etiquette rules of society in the year such and such? And then you'll find out how they would have met their spouse. What would be accepted? What would not be accepted? You know, it's a whole different ballgame than what it is today. And people don't think about those things.
Yeah.
Break it down.
Right. Yeah. No, that's especially, you know, in Italy where, you know, there, a lot of the marriages were arranged even here when, you know,
exactly.
Even here when they first got here. You know, I think I'm going to look into that because I have a couple of favorite relatives that lived in the 1600s that I know that's a cool idea. To try and imagine yourself in their shoes and what it was like to live there and do those kinds of things, you know. Well, this has been a lot of fun. They're fascinating stories. I really enjoyed it. You know, send me anything that, you know, if you have any photos or anything you want me to include, email them to me if there's anything that you haven't sent yet. And we'll include it in there. But this has been great fun. I really, really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much, Bob. It was fun. And I enjoy what you do with the site. I enjoy how that, you know, we discover things about certain people. I may be quiet on the site, but I learn a lot by seeing everybody else's questions and answers.
Well, thank you. And I'm working with somebody that I just interviewed recently. He recorded, he's written a few books, but he's recorded the stories back in the late 70s, early 80s. He actually has recordings of the people that he interviewed. And Ooh. We're going to put those recordings out. The people were born in like, you know, 1900, 1904. And they're telling him their stories. And you actually hear their voices.
Oh, that's cool.
He sent me two, you know, just to kind of break me. And it's incredible. It's just unbelievable.
That would give me chills.
Yeah, exactly what happened to me as I was listening to one of these stories, you know. So look forward to that. It's coming up. It's coming up in, you know, 3 or 4 weeks.
I can't wait. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Ciao.
Bye-bye.